thank you very much to the organizers and especially Alessia for having me here, and I'm happy to speak about ongoing work and also some of the results obtained in the previous papers enlisted here in 2020 and 2017 in collaboration with Alexey Koshelev and Alexey Starobinsky. So I will speak today about R-square inflation and how it can be generalized to all higher curvature gravity. But the main theme of my talk is basically to give a totally a new point of view of inflationary observables, which is totally different from the current knowledge of inflation, so which has been understood so far in the last decades. So I plan to talk mainly focus on this in these lines. So first I will give a brief introduction to inflationary cosmology, current status, and all our theoretical physicists endeavors of probing UV physics through inflationary cosmology. I will try to give a grand summary, and then I will go to the one of the most favorable models of inflation, R plus R square, and I will give some details about why it is important from the point of view of quantum gravity. And then I will speak about how to go beyond R plus R square gravity. Surely, I mean, this is our wish. We want to know what is beyond GR, and R plus R square is already consistent with Planck data, but if, in what ways we can extend R plus R square gravity still consistent with Planck data and give more predictions possibly. And this attempt leads to a totally new concept, which is non-locality. And the way it emerges in it is quite generic without even assuming any fundamental theory like string theory or any other theories, but there are some motivations. But the way I approach today about some non-locality and gravity is through phenomenological point of view and from general principles of gravity, okay? And then I will provide some precise predictions that emerge from this setup, and I will explain how these predictions will be drastically different, but still very, very interesting and very much compatible with the current data, and very interesting in the scope of future CMB gravitational wave observations. Then I will comment briefly about distinguishing non-local R-square like inflation with respect to EFT of inflation. When I say EFT, it's basically the large class of scalar tensor theories where basically you don't modify the GR part, but you add some different type of matter, some more general scalar fields like that, okay? So let me give why we should go beyond general relativity. This everyone knows, the GR is successful, but GR predicts singularities, and well, singularities are mathematical artifacts, so should we care? Well, we do not, but still any theory which has singularities indicates that the theory is failing at some point. And the nature of GR, especially the singularities, indicate that there exists some regime where curvature of space-time is super large. Okay, so this is known, like in if you talk about cosmology or black hole singularities in cosmology, you have curvatures blowing up with like 1/T something. And if you have black hole physics, you have 1/R something in spherically symmetric case. Okay, so the message we should take is at some point, at some energy scale, we will hit some high curvature regime where modifications of GR are dominant. I think this is an important message. And okay, so well, today I'll speak about cosmology, so not black holes. So again observationally why again we should modify GR. So this cosmological motivation is explaining CMB. CMB is what we observe is the cosmic microwave background and the whole large scale structure of the universe satisfies some generic properties such as homogeneity and isotropy. And we see in the cosmic microwave background, which are basically the seeds of large scale structure, tiny temperature fluctuations, which are so tiny that cannot be easily explained within GR. So this is the problem, and this family is known as horizon problem, flatness problem. I'm not going into details. Rather, I will just directly switch to the one of the compelling explanation for the CMB is inflationary paradigm, which says the following. Okay, well, you modify GR, how you should modify such that you can explain CMB. So according to inflationary paradigm, your modification of GR should be like, there should be a period of accelerated expansion in the early universe. The accelerated expansion is denoted by the growth of scale factor. You take some Friedman, Robertson, Walker universe, and there is a scale factor, and the scale factor exponentially grows. This is basically roughly in very simple words what is inflationary paradigm. Let me go a bit technical. Inflationary paradigm is basically, well, I said exponential expansion. What it means is near De Sitter expansion. So the De Sitter space is a very special space. Like we know when we do particle physics, we mostly talk about space-time, which is Minkowski. Okay, so it is maximally symmetric space-time. In the same way, De Sitter space, it has maximum symmetries like Minkowski, and it is a constant curvature space-time. So what inflation tells you that there must be a regime where expansion of the universe is close to De Sitter. It cannot be exact De Sitter, which is a problem. If it is the case, we cannot explain CMB. So it must be close to De Sitter. How do we define this in precise way? Mathematically, we say that Hubble parameter, which is the derivative of the scale factor divided by A, is almost constant for a certain period of time in the early universe. If this happened, it's good enough to explain CMB. Okay, how do we have expansion of universe? As I said, we need to modify GR. There are two ways to modify. One, you modify the left-hand side of Einstein equations or right-hand side, okay? And when I say modification, what does it mean? Basically, whenever we modify GR, we basically introduce additional degrees of freedom, additional propagating degrees of freedom. And also we basically change, get some new solutions, like new geometries, right? So anyway, so these are the two ways you can modify. If you modify left-hand side, which is geometric modification of GR, and right-hand side, you add some hypothetical matter, okay? So what CMB tells you that there are these temperature fluctuations, uniform and homogeneous and isotropic. So to explain this, you need a new degree of freedom, which has to be scalar. Otherwise, you cannot explain the temperature fluctuations. Okay, so then you can introduce scalar, again, modification of left-hand side or by right-hand side. Okay, and if we get a scalar from left-hand side modification, we call that as scalaron. And if you get a scalar degree of freedom from the right-hand side, we call it as inflatron. So there is some matter anyway, and this matter causes somehow this expansion of universe, inflationary expansion, and this matter in the early universe will generate quantum fluctuations, and these quantum fluctuations are basically the origin of all these tiny temperature fluctuations we see in the CMB. This is the idea, and what we basically, any lecture notes or any textbook of inflation comes with explanation that, okay, you modify the right hand side, and the explanation is basically you have some scalar field and there is some potential, and scalar field wrote down the potential, and it will cause expansion of universe. Okay, this viewpoint is very much popular because of our success of particle physics and beyond the standard model. So we are more aligned to the majority of us aligned to think from particle physics point of view, we must have some scalar field and there is some potential, some fundamental potential. Okay, well, this picture gives some very heuristic understanding. So there is inflation. So when the scalar field rolls down here from here down, so we have quasi digital expansion. When it goes to some minima, it oscillates and it will produce particles. So this is the standard picture. Okay. And this has so many interesting effects connecting particle physics with some early universe expansion. And there is another thing, which is quantum gravity, Planck scale physics, which is again some far away from inflationary physics. So the idea is we can learn about quantum gravity through its connections with inflationary paradigm. But this is not the picture I will talk about in this talk. So I will basically give some a different picture, which is geometric modification of gravity. But before I go, so let me review what are the basic properties of this picture with scalar fields. Okay, I will skip some standard slides. Okay, and let me come to the inflationary observables. So inflation is very much successful because it is a paradigm that leads us to test whatever physics we put in. Okay, so how do we test? There are set of observables related to the quantum fluctuations generated during inflation. Okay, and these fluctuations can be measured through 2-point and 3-point correlations. And so there are two kinds of 2-point, 3-point correlations. One is scalar 2-point correlations and scalar 3-point correlations, as well as tensor, so which is basically the related through primordial gravitational waves. Okay, so the most well-known observables which are very much measured is the scalar power spectrum. The scalar 2-point correlation is most precisely measured by the Planck data, and its tilt. So basically it is a parameter related to the derivative of the power spectrum with respect to the wave number. So and this is precisely measured, and it is related to n number of e folds during inflation, which is typically 50 to 60. What is unknown and most crucial parameter is the ratio of tensor power spectrum to scalar power spectrum, and it is bounded from above and according to the latest Planck data. Okay, then 3-point correlations. 3-point correlations basically tell us about self interactions of these fields, whether it is inflaton, scalaron, or graviton. So here I will speak about scalar self interactions and during inflation, and this leads to the so called non Gaussianities. So if you take 2-point correlation, it's Gaussian, and the 3-point correlation is basically deviation from Gaussianity. So this is measured by this parameter called FNL, and it is bounded. There are some numbers related to the different limits of FNL, which I will speak about in detail in the later slides. But just remember, there are these three important parameters: NS, which is precisely measured, so that means we have less freedom, so we cannot put any kind of matter in the modifying Einstein equations. We need to modify Einstein equation in exactly in a way that we explain this, otherwise it is ruled out. Okay, and this is interesting parameter. So we tend to predict some number for this for different models of inflation, and non-Gaussianities Well, so far the current understanding tells us that it relates to the nature of inflaton, and I will speak about this in detail. And another thing which is quietly established in the inflationary cosmology is that whether you can have one scalar or multiple scalars driving the expansion. So if you have a single scalar, there are two relations which are consistency relations, relates R, tensor to scalar ratio, and tensor tilt. Like scalar says tilt, we also have tensor tilt, and it is they are proportional to each other. And there is another parameter which is FNL squeeze limit, which is this one, and it is related to NS. These are the two consistency relations which hold for single field inflation. Okay, this is according to the current understanding, but there are crucial modifications to this thing. Okay, this is one of the highlight of this framework of inflation, which I'm going to talk about. Anyway, so now what do we have here? We are unknowns, as I explained. So we have FNL, R, and NT. So if we have a standard scalar field, okay, something like some scalar field which has a kinetic term of d mu phi and some potential minimally coupled to gravity. Okay, suppose if we have such a scalar field, we cannot produce any large non-Gaussian entities. Okay, so in other words, this parameter FNL which quantifies the self interactions of the field is almost negligible if we have any scalar field which is just with a simple simple kinetic term with some potential. And this is quite a generic result, okay? And there are so far from several decades, the understanding is that if there are non-Gaussianities, we need to violate one of these four conditions. One is that we need to go beyond the single field, and we need to go beyond the canonical kinetic energy. That means you need to modify the kinetic term of the scalar field, and we need to go beyond slow roll. Slow roll is basically when the scalar field is rolling down the potential slowly, okay? And then we need to modify the initial vacuum. Normally we take it to be so-called Bunch-Davis vacuum. So basically the initial conditions for the quantum fluctuations. Okay, well, the Bunch-Davis vacuum is a special vacuum, so which I will try to discuss if I have time. So anyways, the general picture is we need to modify these four. Okay, good. And is it the theorem? Yes, so far it is established as theorem, otherwise we cannot generate large non-Gaussian entities. Well, this is not the case. There is a case which is none of the above, that is the conclusion of my talk, but let me go ahead. And so for this, and I will explain how this, all of this can be still valid, still we can generate non-Gaussian entities. Okay, so, but anyway, because of this classification, there are several models of inflation has emerged by modifying each of these, by adding multiple fields, modifying canonical kinetic energy, kinetic term, and slow roll and initial vacuum state. And this leads to, as I said, large non-Gaussian entities. Okay, but let's go into a bit more detail. What is large and where? What is large with respect to modification of each category? Okay, so there are three well-known shapes of non-Gaussian entities. Okay, non-Gaussian entities are basically three-point correlations. Okay, so you have three-point correlations in the whole CMP. Okay, and there are three wave numbers, and which are basically they form a triangle, and there are different shapes of triangles because momentum conservation. So each shape so far understood as that it tells us some physics, some nature of inflaton or the scalar field that is driving inflation. If there is a non-Gaussianity in the squeezed limit, that means you take one of the wave number to be much smaller than the other two, then the indication, so understood as that either it is multi-field inflation or non-slow roll inflation. Okay, so this is multi-field or non-slow roll. Okay, then this one is, we generate such a non-gaussianity if we have a non-canonical kinetic term. Okay, that means we, instead of d mu phi, okay, kinetic term, we write some function of this, some generic function of this. Okay, there are several models related to this, and this produces large non-gaussianities in this limit. And if we have this one, this can indicate, if we have maximum signal in this one, this indicates basically we, inflation has started with non-Bunch Davis initial conditions. Well, I do not want to call it as Bunch Davis, actually it is called adiabatic vacuum initial conditions. So I will speak about this correction later. But so anyway, initial conditions, if the initial conditions modified, we detect this non-gaussianity. Okay, this is current understanding. Again, this is what known as the physics of non-gaussianities. Okay, well, I give a totally different picture. Again, let me reinstate. Okay, so again, so with this understanding, so there are several models of inflation, basically hundreds of them are proposed in several decades, in the last decades, and all of them can be categorized in these two diagrams. Okay, on the left hand side, you take a minimal canonical scalar field. Okay, then there are no non-gaussianities. Okay, so we produce power spectrum and some tensor to scalar ratio, and the consistency relations holds. And if you modify the non-kinetic term, then you can get a non-canonical scalar field. Then you can also modify coupling of scalar field with gravity, so you can add non-minimal coupling. So basically you can generalize to all the way up to the so-called Horodensky theories. So there are all the class of inflationary models can fit in this diagram. And if you go from down to up, you increase the complexity, you increase number of functions, you introduce number of parameters introduced in the Lagrangian, and this will change the dynamics of inflation and also predictions. All of these, some of these basically setups can be motivated from some, well, here I wrote string theory, but it can be any version of quantum gravity or something beyond the standard model of particle physics. So inflation, the goal of inflation is to get some signatures of either of these, some quantum gravity signatures or some anything beyond standard model of particle physics. Okay, well, as I said, there are so many classes of models. A lot of them are ruled out, and a lot of them are still in. So, well, this is a quite a large list, but there are two models which fit very well with the data. Sorry for the poor quality of the image, but so this is the plot of tensor to scalar ratio and the scalar spectral index. There are two models, which is R square inflation and Higgs inflation. If you take the standard model, Higgs and non-minimally decoupled to gravity, it gives interesting predictions within the current bounds of tensor to scalar ratio. These two models have very good motivations. Higgs inflation, Higgs is found, and non-minimal coupling is expected at the UV scales anyway. And R-square inflation, which is the most interesting setup, I will get back to that in a while. Okay, so well, it's just the next slide. So R-square inflation is a modification of gravity, which is a geometric modification, which looks like this. You add R-square term to the Lagrangian, the Einstein-Hilbert Lagrangian, as I said before. So at some point, at some energy scales, we will have some regime of modification of gravity dominating over GR. This is a very good example. If you take this Lagrangian, okay, there is one parameter F0, okay, which I write it as MP square by 6M square. So if you look at this, there are two regimes which exist. One regime, higher curvature regime, which is basically you have the R square term is dominant over GR term. If that is dominant, exactly like this, okay, well, in this way, and then this leads to inflationary expansion, and which is again, as I said, it is near de Sitter expansion, and here I call it as unstable de Sitter because you must have near de Sitter, but it has to end at some point, okay? And then there is a low curvature regime where GR is dominant and R square term is subdominant. There are these two regimes, okay? And inflation resolution interpolates these two regimes in a very nice way, okay? And this is what's so-called the Starobinsky inflation. And as I said, before I said, like, you have some scalar field which leads to the minimum of the potential you will have that will oscillate and produce particles. In this geometric framework also, you can have particle production through basically the out of vacuum. So you have vacuum transition, which will have produce some non-zero Bobrikov coefficients, but let me not go into complicated details. But this particle production in R-square inflation has been very clearly explained in this proceedings of 1981 by Starobinsky. And what is interesting in this Lagrangian, it gives unstable de Sitter phase. But you know, these equations of motion in most of our fundamental theories are time symmetric. So you can have unstable de Sitter both to the future and also to the past, which means actually that R square inflation does not exactly solve the singularity problem, but it gives a phase between far below the Planck scale and much above our electroweak scale, okay? And there is some interesting study by Hawking, Hertog, and Riehl on this unstable de Sitter in the context of string theory, and they actually solve initial conditions problem. But I will just mention this reference, but this is not the topic of our discussion now. So as I said, R square gives a paradigm of expansion, and expansion is determined, governed by this simple equation, which is box R equal to m square R. It is the trace equation of R plus R square gravity. And if you look at it in a mathematical way, so inflationary evolution is basically given by the phase where when the Ricci scalar is eigen mode of D'Alembertian operator. Okay, so this is quite important point. Please remember, I will come back to this later. And so this, the solution of this gives exponential expansion. The expressions look a bit complicated, but it is nearly exponentially expanding. It will end at some point. And as I said before, R plus R square has two regimes, high curvature regime and low curvature regime. So when the inflation ends, we enter into low curvature regime that exactly leads to the matter dominated stage. Okay. And the predictions of R square inflation are basically this, and this makes this model extremely successful with the Planck data. And we have spectral index exactly fits very well. It's in the middle of the data, and there is tensor to scalar ratio we have not yet detected, but soon maybe we will detect this in future. Okay, so this model has been very successful, and several frameworks of quantum gravity try to achieve such a expansion of universe in a setup where they introduce scalar fields. But here we will try to go beyond this. And due to the time constraint, I will just mention very briefly that R plus R square is not any random modification of gravity. R square term is motivated from the developments of so-called conformal anomaly, which is basically when you consider GR, classical GR, and put some quantum matter fields. So the loop corrections kind of generate terms such that you need to introduce R square term in the Lagrangian, okay? So this is actually fundamentally motivated from the those calculations of so-called conformal anomaly. I'll skip this point, but okay, now we want to go see, okay, well, R square predicts something, and can we go beyond it? Okay, that's a very natural question, because by R square term, you can add R cube term and R power 4 term to the Lagrangian. Why not? And why somehow the nature is preferring R square term? Okay, well, we do not know, but if we suppose include R cube and R power 4 terms, the coefficients of them has to be extremely small. This tells us that any modification of R square is not very good, because we get deviation from the prediction of spectral index. So that means what? So what, as I said before, R square inflation produces the expansion of universe given by Ricci scalar being eigenmode of D'Alembertian. This is an eigenvalue equation. This is seems to be extremely successful. Okay, there are different ways we can understand it, but I will not go into the details. Let me also mention R cube, R power 4. There are also some other modifications motivated from asymptotic safety. There are people here, experts of asymptotic safety, but even those modifications are negligible, have to be negligible. Okay, so there we don't deviate much with the predictions. So any of this is true for not just R square, R plus R square, it is any F of R. Any F of R, if we try to modify significantly, deviate significantly from R square, we spoil this. Also, we spoil the running of spectral index. This is the most important inflationary observable, which is detected quite precisely, because many models of inflation, they basically talk about this, but running of spectral index has to be extremely small. And this can only be achieved if we take some evolution of universe close to R square, okay? And then, okay, well, these two are fixed. R square evolution, inflation evolution is fixed. Then what are the other observables? Well, this we do not know. NT, we do not know. FNL, we do not know. Okay, the only way, at least especially FNL, as we discussed, is basically, it is so far understood to be only from modification of nature of scalar field. But anyway, we don't go into such details, but we will see how much we can modify R plus R square, keeping these two intact. This is the question I'm trying to pose here. And well, how do we modify? We can go beyond R plus R square. Okay, let me go to a different point of view and see, for example, what is the most general quantum gravity action? So the people have studied quantum gravity from different point of views, but there is one specific framework of quantum gravity from effective field theory of quantum gravity, and there is a study by Barwinsky in 1994, that what is the most general action you can write up to quadratic and cubic in curvature. Okay, so motivated from this, okay, I will ask a different question. What is the most general theory of gravity action, which is good with the R square predictions, especially NS and running of NS. Okay, now whatever we construct, whatever the general action we construct, we usually play with the Ricci scalar, Ricci tensor, and Weyl tensor. These are the three. Why not Riemann tensor? Well, Riemann can always be written in terms of Weyl. There are several identities. So these three are enough to construct a most general gravity action. Okay. Well, here it is. Our motivation is not to construct a most general gravity action, but to construct a gravity action that admits this eigenvalue equation as a solution in FRW background. Okay. And Ricci tensor, well, at least during inflation, from the framework of inflation, Ricci tensor is nearly equal to R by 4 proportional to G mu nu. So we basically eliminate this tensor and we left with 2 R and Weyl. We can include Ricci tensor, but it is much more complicated. But for the moment, let's try to write a more general action, including R and Y. Okay, let's go ahead with constructing curvature invariants. And then the minimal setup, okay, is basically R and R plus R square, we already discussed. And when we include while square is the natural term, you can write. And interestingly, as some of you, most of you know, that this theory is so-called stellar gravity, and it is renormalizable. So the details of this actually discussed by Luca a few months ago when he gave a talk in this seminar series. So I will not go into details, but I will just point out that the renormalizability of stellar gravity is an amazing feat. It should not be forgotten. Okay, so I mean, gravity is non-renormalizable, but there is already a robust example. Of course, this has a tensor ghost, which is bad. And there are several solutions exist proposed from the changing the way of quantization. I will list, I just listed some people who tried to do this. But here, what we want to do is, okay, well, we want to write the most general action with all the curvature invariants, okay? And then in this motivation, so we can add, for example, higher derivative terms. Well, this R, this math, VR is indicates both Ricci scalar and Weyl tensor. Okay, let's try to add such terms, these terms, then we get extension of stellar gravity with infinite derivatives. It's just a blind extension, right? We write all possible terms and we end up with this. Well, this action has quite interesting properties, especially if you can tune this f of box such a way that you don't have ghosts in the theory, okay? This is interesting, and also there are several motivations for this kind of action, and I will just refer to our article in 2020, and also a paper by Luca, Buininfante, written in 2021 for fundamental motivations, but I will skip that part, okay? We are not done yet, so this is not the most general action, okay? What do we want? We want box R equal to M square R as the solution, and we write all the terms.
Jean, it is not, yeah. Sorry, just a small question. So this action, the non-local action, as the interpretation of a classical action or of an effective action?
Well, it is not an effective action. So the idea is to construct the full action, which is ghost-free. I mean, whatever, if you consider some matter loops or whatever, I don't know how to achieve to such an action, but you have this with good properties. I don't know what you mean by an effective action, but I think the idea here is to make it as a fundamental action, which is ghost-free. And of course, when you compute, when you add matter and try to do loop corrections, you do spoil the ghost-free properties. You may generate more poles, but...
Okay, so it is a Bayer action in the interpretation of non-local gravity.
Exactly. So it is just a Bayer action. So you don't... Mm-hmm. There's no matter. There's no question of matter for the moment, okay? And we modified basically significantly R square term, included all the infinite derivatives, okay? Well, so what? But we need to include this as a solution, okay? Then there are restrictions that on this FR of box, there are two conditions which arise on this FR of box, which is basically the infinite derivative operator analytic, okay? And if you satisfy these two conditions, basically you have box R equal to M square R as the solution of this action. Well, then there is also Weyl term, Weyl square, Weyl f of box, Weyl. Weyl in the FRW background is zero because FRW background is conformally flat. So that means this is not the complete story yet. You can include even more curvature dependencies inside this f of box, basically, okay? Now, then we can generalize this Weyl f of box, Weyl, and in a even better way, we include most generic term with f of box depending on R, which is scalar. It doesn't spoil the solution because the Weyl is zero. So all the contributions in FRW background, all the contributions of this term for equations of motion in FRW background will be zero. Okay, so we can generalize this Weyl term this way. And then this FW box is all summation of infinite boxes and infinite scalar curvature. Okay, well, here there is I put some prefactor here, okay, with a again motivation from r plus r square gravity. So there is a high curvature regime. So somehow when this term is dominant, we get we can neglect this mp square term. So there is a all these higher curvature terms will be dominant at some point. So this is basically the motivation, but I will explain this effect of this later. So now what we end up with, we already ended up with the general action, which includes infinite derivatives and also infinite curvatures. It makes sense, right? If you add while box while, it is at, it should have the equal effect like r while square, because both are six derivatives. So you can generalize it to all infinite derivatives. Okay, well, still our job is not yet done. So we can still further extend this by including cubic curvature invariants. Okay, like this. Okay, this we can do, and there are several identities we can use, several properties of Weyl and Bianchi identities. This is a long and tedious calculation, which the details will be in the paper, but finally we arrive at an action. This is the most general you can write in terms of R and Weyl, and this action admits solution, which is box R equal to M square R for FRW background. Okay, this looks quite complicated, right? But let me try to see the things more clearly. Okay, let me try to show you the things more clearly. So there is Einstein-Hilbert term, there is R F of box R, and there is R cube with all infinite derivatives there in these functions L1, L2, L3, and while is most generically modified because the while term does not change anything background equations for FRW, and also we can have while cube term. Well, then you ask a question, okay, well, you can add more and more. Well, I will stop at some point. Why? Because this is the most general action that will affect up to 3-point inflationary correlations. So for the moment, I'm interested in 3-point inflationary correlation, not beyond that. Okay. So now, of course, there are several unknowns here, which I call them as form factors. And well, they are quite generic, right? But there are ways to fix them. First way is to fix the form factors by demanding box R equal to M square R as the solution. This puts some constraints on FR and L1, L2, L3. And this FW and C1, C2, C3 are intact because again, while is zero for FRW, okay? So we get some minimal constraints. And then how do we fix the remaining form factors? At least this form factor can be fixed. Again, demand that ghost free helps us. Here, when we demand ghost free, there are two, remember there are two regimes I discussed before. One is high curvature regime when inflation happens. Another one is the low curvature regime, which is close to Minkowski. So let me try to make these two regimes very good. And if I do that, then we end up with the generic structure of form factors like this. Okay, then you ask a question, what about in between these regimes? Well, I will explain, I will try to comment on this a bit later. Okay, so now all the form factors are fixed, then we end up with theory. See, when we write this theory, you see infinite derivatives, infinite curvatures. Then you say, come on, you start with the theory with infinitely many parameters. Okay, well, which is bad, but no, actually not true. We have only finite parameter space. Thanks to ghost-free conditions, our form factors are fixed like this, and this they are related to exponential of entire. Well, the conservation point of view is just I put this exponential of entire functions entire functions to be polynomials, and if I take any finite degree polynomial, it has only finite parameters. Okay, I don't know how much time I have, so that I can.
10 minutes.
Okay, so then I have to skip these parts. I will try.
It's up to you. You could speak more about your representation and have less time for questions. So it is up to you.
Okay. Okay. Then I will try to take 5 minutes more. So what I say is we have a Lagrangian that depends on some set of this set of this function set of functions, and this set of this function has some constraint from demanding that we need to have inflationary solution, and this one as well. These are basically the form factors sitting in the quadratic Ricci scalar term and also cubic Ricci scalar term. And then there are two other one which is sitting in the all this. I will try to clean up a bit so maybe you can see this. Oh, so this is the form factor. We cannot fix it from the background, and then we fix it from demand that we want to have ghost free in two regimes. One is during inflation and also in the Minkowski limit. And these form factors are completely free. Okay, there is a question by Benjamin.
So there is a question by Barney.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you. I'm just trying to digest this action. So maybe the first question, is it obvious that the term cubic in the Ricci scalar and with form factors actually factorizes? Because I would imagine that the most general form has a single function of three box operators acting on the three Ricci scalars. And that
general,
this function does not factorize into function one acting on the first Ricci scalar, function two acting on the second, and so on.
Yes, actually, this I think you're referring to the way how Barvinsky write. You have some more also maybe I think in your papers as well. You write some function of box one, box two, box three acting on R cube, right? This is what you're saying.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Actually, you can write in this way, which is indeed general, because you if you have some terms which over and derivatives contracting with other terms, we can always most of them we can eliminate by adding total derivatives, some arbitrary number of total derivatives. So it's just a different way of writing it. So you can bring whole thing. Suppose if you have d mu r term, okay, then you can add some total derivative with box acting on full curvatures and try to choose coefficients such that you cancel all these terms with covariant derivatives with indices acting on curvature.
No, that's completely fine. What I'm saying is that in general, a function which depends on three arguments is not a product of three functions of a single argument. So you're restricting the class.
In general, it is not, you're right. In general, it is not true, but I'm just using the fact that using total derivatives, you can write to this form. Of course, I'm restricting it and because this is a nice form so that I can put box r equal to m square r as exact solution so that at least the background is not crazily modified and so this action is not ruled out. So yeah, I hope that answers you.
Yeah, maybe, sorry, second question. There's also this identity that relates box acting on the y tensor to covariant derivatives of the Ricci tensor and Ricci scalar. Did you use
yes.
that?
If you have covariant derivatives contracted with Weyl tensor, you can write it in terms of Cotton tensor, and the Cotton tensor is related to Ricci tensor. But from construction, I eliminate all the Ricci tensors from the action because I am not interested in Ricci tensor because Ricci tensor is close to Ricci scalar during inflation. So this construction only cares about only two tensors, just R Ricci scalar and Weyl tensor. So I eliminate all the terms which leads to Ricci tensor dependent terms.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, now I write the choice of this cubic form factors in some convenient form just for simplicity, and at the end I end up with basically some set of functions, subset of polynomials, okay, which have finite parameters. I will explain in a while what is the effect of these parameters. Okay, so Okay, well, then we basically have an action which is more general. It has inflationary solution. We need to compute perturbations, 2 point and 3 point correlations. Okay, this is a totally long derivation which is spread across the paper, three papers actually. So, but I will try to, I will just declare the final result here. Okay, but of course I will just explain. Thanks that when we write this cubic term, okay, and this cubic term has to satisfy this kind of constraint in order not to spoil the box r equal to m square r as a solution. And as a consequence, the second variation of this term exactly vanishes. Okay, so to two point correlations, this cubic term does not contribute. The same is true, the cubic term in the Weyl tensor. Okay, because when you vary, when you do two variations, you are remaining with background Weyl, which kills the whole term. Okay, background Weyl is zero. As a result, so the 2 point correlations are determined by, of course, GR term, which is negligible, the RF of box R, and the whole this infinite tower of derivatives, and also the infinite tower of Ricci scalars and cross terms as well. Okay, if we do this, and we already chose the form factors as a way that we do not have ghosts, at least the perturbations are stable, we end up with predictions of scalar power spectrum, same as the local R square inflation, and the tensor power spectrum gets modified, that modifies the tensor to scalar ratio, and we modify tensor tilt. So as a result, we modify the so-called single field consistency relation, but in a single field setup. Well, here it is, there is only one single field, one scalar on propagating here, okay? So, but we modify it because we add Weyl terms, and Weyl terms modify tensor power spectrum, okay? So that's why this relation is violated here, okay? And this has quite interesting consequences. We can have tensor to scalar ratio less than the prediction of Stravinsky model, or I mean R plus R square model, also greater. I will show that in the next slide. But what is interesting here is that tensor tilt can be both positive and negative depending on the parameter space. I'm not giving the details of the numbers of these parameters, but these R and NT just depend on gamma T, this function. This function is related to that, basically the form factors, which is function of box and R sitting in between Y, okay? So, anyways, so what we get is a interesting result where you can also have blue tilt. Okay, let me refer to some different papers, alternative models of inflation which predict blue tilt, and they say that, okay, well, inflation is not compatible with blue tilt, and if there is a blue tilt, we rule out inflation. Actually, here not. And we exactly can get a blue tilt in the setup where evolution of universe is governed by eigenvalue equation, which is the trace equation of R plus R square, okay? So we can also have...
A couple of questions about these plots. So first, what is the number of epochs here, and what is the color coding in the plots?
I put number of epochs to be 55,
mm-hmm. Okay.
And what is another question? Other question?
What is the color coding? So what are the different lines, the orange, green?
Yeah, they are just, they just corresponds to different values of parameters. I did not put the values of parameters here just not to make this slide complicated, but they just, you just try to change the different function of gamma T and try to evaluate it during the digital regime. So,
and so gamma
different predictions. Yeah.
And the gamma to generate these plots is precisely what functions, and what are the parameters that you are changing?
I change here. I choose a gamma here, gamma box to be something like some A times box square plus B times box cube. Well, it is not just box. It is box plus R over 3, because this gamma is not just function of box, it is also function of Ricci scalar in a specific combination to have ghost free condition. So I mean, this color coding is basically related to different values of A and B. So well, basically what I want to show here is you can have any value of tensor to scalar ratio with both possibilities of red and blue tilt, and also there is also running of tilt, which can also be, actually you see small numbers here, but they're actually quite larger than any scalar field models of inflation which predict blue tilt as well. There are like some more density theories where I think I'm going too far, but so what I'm saying is these predictions are indeed quite different and from the known models of inflation. Also the detailed analysis will be in the paper writing it. So then you can also have the R greater than 0.04, because remember we have R is 0.036 and prediction of R plus R square is 0.004 for 55 E folds. Okay, so with a different choice of parameters you can have all these possibilities. But okay, well, let me try to go to the very interesting, most interesting part. Of course, this is interesting, but I want to explain about non-Gaussianities, which is a totally new result compared to the current papers in archive. So yeah, we have computed in this the most general action, which contains cubic non-local Ricci scalar term and also cubic non-local Ricci tensor terms, and we computed scalar non-Gaussianities. Okay, and let me try to explain. So when we compute scalar non-Gaussianities, there not all the terms will give scalar non-Gaussianities for a very simple reason. If you calculate variation of while, it is proportional to these two bad input potentials phi plus psi, okay, in your perturbed metric. And during inflation, well, by the way, this is a Jordan frame calculation. So during inflation, phi plus psi is zero. So all the terms which are depending on while do not contribute to scalar non-Gaussianities. So then we are left with only this part of the action, and we have computed this, and this leads to quite interesting cases which are mimic several models of scalar fields. But here by just changing the numbers of parameters, we kind of get different peaks in the non-Gaussianities. Okay, well, schematically this is the following. So in the local model we have the vertices, which is just some constants, but here in the non-local model we have vertices given by operator of box. But when we put on shell conditions, this operator of box leads to some like kind of translation of vertices, because these vertices are depending on the background, right? So now in the quasi-de-Sitter, you kind of generate kind of enhanced vertices because of this this relation, because when you have box operator and the covariant derivative acting on scalar, they do not commute in the curved space time. So okay, so and because of this effect, when we take all the terms, each term, and try to compute three-point correlations, we generate several interactions, and some of them which are totally new in the context of non-local gravity. Okay, so totally new. Well, they knew that such interactions do not appear in the known EFT models of inflation. That's what I mean. Okay, and because of, well, again, these are long expressions, but let me explain the physics part, which is different from current understanding. Okay, so we get, for example, we play with different parameters here. Also, because the parameters of FNL, this 3-point correlation is measured with this FNL. Normally, it is function of three momenta, right? And now here we have this, because of these exponentials, we get some new dependencies, and which leads to this following new shapes of non-Gaussianities. I will try to give at the end what is the typical structure of FNN. So let me explain some distinct features here. So we get here some FNL, which is large in two limits. One is equilateral. This blue line is equilateral, and the green line is orthogonal shape. Okay. And let me try to remind you, if we have large non-Gaussianity in the equilateral, which is so far understood to be indication of non-canonical scalar field. Okay, what is non-canonical scalar field? Non-canonical scalar field is a scalar field whose perturbation propagates with a sound speed, with less than the speed of light. Okay, then only you generate large non-Gaussianities. That is the current understanding. Here we have a non-local effect, but the scalar field propagation is just same as the speed of light. Okay. But due to the non-local effect, we generate large equilateral peak and also orthogonal peak, although orthogonal is less than the equilateral. And basically this setup, non-local setup, kind of mimics non-canonical scalar field, but without having the sound, changing the sound speed. So this specific thing is exclusively come from this non-local R cube term. And another thing, which is the running of non-Gaussianities. I think this is what distinguishes the model from the non-scalar field models of inflation. In the scalar field models of inflation, FNL is depending on this sound speed, which is due to the non-canonical scalar field. But this sound speed has to be slowly varying, okay? And if it doesn't slowly vary, we spoil the prediction of spectral index, which is precisely measured. So in those setups, in the non-canonical scalar field models within the current observations, they do not produce running of spectral index this large, okay? And if we detect something, this can be indication of non-local nature of gravity. Of course, we plot, maybe I forgot to mention, we plot all these things with the non-locality scale. So there is M is the mass of the scalaron divided by the non-locality scale. So non-locality scale is always higher than the mass of the scalaron. Okay, so this is a bound we get, otherwise, again, it is ruled out. But anyway, so this is one shape we obtain. And another, in this case, even though there is another shape, which is squeezed limit, okay, squeezed limit is very small. It is known in the single field inflation, squeezed limit on Gaussianity is very small. It can only be large in the multi-field setup, okay? Well, here we, in this specific shape, squeezed limit is small, but if you look at the running of this squeezed limit on Gaussianity, which is almost the same order of magnitude as this one, this does not happen in the single field model. So this is again something in a local effect, maybe future precision measurements can see it. Now we change the values of parameters, not drastically, but a little bit. We get a different shape of non-Gaussianity where you have large squeezed limit, which is the red line, but almost zero equilateral and something of the order of one in the orthogonal limit, okay? This is, you can produce it, such a signal in models where you have multi-fields and with non-standard initial conditions, non-Bunch Davis vacuum, okay? But here we produce it, we choose a Bunch Davis vacuum and there we do not have multi-fields, but still we produce an interesting signal that mimics this, but again can be distinguishable because of, again, a large running of non-Gaussianities, okay? Which is interesting. Anyway, we need something new to probe this class of theories and also to learn about quantum gravity. Okay, so in the same way, there is another shape of non-Gaussianity where you have large, very large equilateral and orthogonal limits, and well, of course, within the bounds of the order of one squeezed limit. This is the maximum point within the current observational bound. We can get this large non-Gaussianities again. This with two distinguishable features, and there are some very low sigma bounds and running non-Gaussianities. So in principle, we cannot really test this, but surely in future, in the upcoming 10 to 20 years, we will have ability to see the running of non-Gaussianities. And well, this is basically the shape of non-Gaussianity. This is basically we plot the function FNL as a function of K1, K2, K3, three wave numbers, okay, which are rescaled in a special way in terms of these parameters alpha and beta. But I just give this plot to show that there is this shape function exists, and it is actually not just equilateral orthogonal and squeeze limit. Basically, we can if we have good data, we can fit this shape function and try to see if we have any true signatures of this theory. And this is shape is much more useful to probe exactly the any model of inflation. Okay, here I give some summaries with respect to non-Gaussianities. So we get several shapes of non-Gaussianities without violating any standard nature of inflaton, such as changing sound speed, changing slow roll, because it is slow roll because it is evolution is given by Boxer equal time square r and the adiabatic initial conditions. Of course, we add a additional thing, non-local interactions, because we have this whole infinite tower of derivatives. Okay, then with large running is something that can distinguish these models with EFT of inflation. And basically, the expression is too long, but the function of FNL is a function of this, but we get additional scale dependence. That means the FNL depends on the total wave number K1 plus K is K1 plus K2 plus K3, okay, which does not happen. So we basically break the scale invariance with the scale invariance of three-point correlations. So it is scale invariant in many models of inflation, especially single field or many multi-fields. But here, the scale invariance is broken by additional dependencies. And also this one, by the way, when you take Ricci scalar during inflation, it is function of time. If it is function of time, it is also function of k. So there is implicitly scale dependence in these functions that determine FNL. And this is the quite distinctive feature, which is useful to probe at least this Lagrangian. I think if we get any signal, this is quite useful to understand how the higher curvature terms, whether they're important or not important in the at the scale of inflation. Okay. So let me conclude. I think I mentioned everything, but we have constructed a most general theory of gravity with R square like inflation. And this leads to actually surprises that you see the standard understanding that in any F of R, you cannot generate non-Gaussianities, but here we do generate non-Gaussianities with quite all known shapes of non-Gaussianities, which are obtained in broad spectrum of scalar field models. Here we obtain in one model where we just change the parameter values, not just the functions. Just we fix the functions and just change the parameter values. We get different shapes of non-Gaussianities and with running features. Okay, well, as I said, not all the terms in the Lagrangian contribute to the scalar non-Gaussianities. So those additional terms, depending on while, can be probed by tensor non-Gaussianities. Yes, we are computing it. So I think soon we will also say something about this. And surely, in summary, generalized non-local R squared inflation is very interesting in a sense that it combines all known observables and with different values which can be obtained. And still, it is not unpredictive model. We do have predictions which can be surely tested, and so those predictions which are mentioned are not just depending on some choice of entire function. Basically, they are quite generic. Even if you take some other choice, still you can generate similar features. I think with this I will conclude. If there are any questions, I'm happy to answer. Thank you very much, and this work will be in archive soon. hopefully. Yeah.
Thanks, Ravan, for the very nice talk. Are there questions? Marco?
Yes, so thank you for the nice talk. I actually have a question basically on what you said in the summary, but also in the last part. So you said that you can get different non-Gaussian entities by changing some of your parameters. So can you, could you first remind me what these parameters actually are? And then thinking about like what sets these parameters if you would embed your theory in a fundamental setup. So how would I determine these parameters?
Thanks for the question. So let me point out this. So this Lagrangian. So as I said, for the scalar non-Gaussian entities, there are only two parts which contributes to this. Okay, and there is this function which is fixed by demand that we want to have the theory to be Gauss-free, and this leads to some polynomial which can be, which is arbitrary, but we choose some kind of polynomial, some finite degree polynomial, which gives some finite parameters. Okay, this is one place. Another one is a cubic rich scalar term, which has these three functions. Okay, well, this we cannot, well, this part will not contribute to second order action. So it's not, these are not fixed by Gauss-free condition, but this, we take it to be such that they are kind of suppressed in the UV, so that, I mean, basically when we calculate non-Gaussian entities, these are the tree level, right? So we don't consider any loops. So we assume that, okay, all the loops are suppressed. Then we try to fix some structure of form factors, something like this, by demanding that, okay, at high, very, very high momenta, these are suppressed. And in the very low energy limit, we should recover the R plus R square or GR. So with these two conditions, of course, still there is a lot of arbitrariness, but there are still parameter space is finite. So so far what I have shown is basically choosing these arbitrary polynomials, taking the values of these coefficients of the order of one, not changing too much.
Okay, but I mean, how would these parameters then be determined? Like some UV completion or something like that?
This is the question. So this is the question. Here it is from phenomenological point of view. So I have no idea how to fix these parameters from UV completion point of view. Okay. So it is like, for example, let's say R plus R square. What determines the coefficient of R plus R square? It is fixed by from observations. And there's no UV completion theory which fixes the coefficient of R square. If it is, then that is the very nice UV completion theory. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Benjamin?
Yeah, thank you for your really nice talk. I'm wondering, so what is the space of values that you can actually produce with this model for the observables? So are there any constraints on what you cannot get with your model, or is it really anything goes? Like if we would go out tomorrow and measure a value, a specific value, would it fit into your model?
So which you're talking about, which observables?
Any of those. I mean, take any of those that you presented, tensor to scalar ratio, non-Gaussian entities, anything. And tomorrow we get the value. Will it fit into your framework or not?
Actually, there is a lot of degree of freedom to choose this parameter. So in principle, we can fit quite large spectrum of values if we detect it. But for example, if, okay, let me say, maybe your question is, if what can maybe the rule out the model? Is it the question?
No, I'm just trying to understand if there's an actual prediction here, or if it's just fixing parameters of a phenomenological model. Because so if I come from a different perspective and I say, I don't know, I have a fundamental theory, this fundamental theory gives me specific values, a single values for NT, R, and all the other quantities. But from your perspective, you have you parameterize theories. And then the question is, can anything fit into this framework? Or is there something that if we measure it would be an indication that maybe this whole approach cannot accommodate this way? And we have to think about something else.
Well, this is quite difficult to answer. So first of all, we cannot exactly give any specific value, okay? But we have a lot of freedom. And what can favor this model is, suppose if we get NT much larger than expected from any class of models, then this model is favorable. But maybe I will try to answer this question, your question, in the context of non-Gaussianities. There is something that you are asking, something that cannot be achieved in this model. That I can say, for example, when we detect equilateral squeeze limit non-Gaussianity, okay, for example, this shape, it is not possible to have just squeeze limit and with equilateral and orthogonal both zero, okay? So it's always non-Gaussianities come with something large either in two of the specific limits. So this way we could not try to achieve in the parameter space, but except this, well, it is quite difficult to say any specific number that will exactly tell us this is the model.
Okay, but so what you're saying is you're actually limiting the parameter space that is achievable within your model or class of models.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, perfect. Thank you.
Surely, if there is an input from fundamental theory, that would be very good to pinpoint the number.
Are there other questions? Okay, so let me also ask a couple of questions. So first, I was not sure about something you said in the conclusion. So you say that your model would give very different results than in standard EFT. But the EFT, as a at least EFT in gravitational settings, as a natural cutoff scale, that is the Planck scale. But inflation in a typical models is supposed to happen like at the scales that are much below the Planck scale. So the fact that you cannot get similar results to EFT, what does that mean? So does it put a constraint on the parameters that you have, for instance, in the function gamma? Or
well, I cannot comment any arbitrary EFT, at least EFT of single field inflation that exists, okay? So which is constructed from scalar field models, okay? So assuming locality, but just changing the sound speed. But at least in this class of EFT, there is one, the sound speed, it affects NS as well as non-Gaussianities. But NS is severely constrained. So that means this sound speed during inflation cannot vary a lot. It is constrained by NS, okay? Now that means when you compute running of non-Gaussianities, then it has to be extremely small because it is constrained by NS. So here we can have large running of non-Gaussianity. What is common with the EFT, and here we can produce non-Gaussianities as large as the EFT, especially this class of EFT, but we produce running of non-Gaussianity is also large compared to the EFT where it cannot be produced. I think this is the distinguishing feature.
But here you're referring to any EFT, so, or you're talking about scalar EFT or gravitational EFT?
Yes. I am talking about scalar EFT and gravitational EFTs. I don't know what you exactly mean. but scalar models of UFT.
Just an axon, a gravitational axon that you can write down the EFT framework, where the natural cutoff
there is a version of there is a version of EFT where you couple inflaton to Weyl square. It is basically proposed by Weinberg. Yeah. There also you produce here quite different results compared to that class of EFT. But if you say any arbitrary EFT, I cannot say that. So I can only say about specific EFTs which are popularly studied in the context of inflationary cosmetics.
And there are other questions. So if you use different form factors, you use those that are essentially motivated by non-local gravity, but in principle, the form factors, at least interpreting the action as an effective action, so they are characteristic of specific theories of quantum gravity. So do you think that the different form factors would lead to very different predictions for the non-Gaussianities?
Yes, here the form factor is quite, well, actually, I can tell you a quite generic result in some limit, for example. Okay. What we computed, for example, we have this generic action, right? Let us switch off the all the cubic terms, okay? So that just, well, for the scalar non-Gaussianities, this is the cubic term, okay? Just put this to zero, okay? Then we computed basically the result non-Gaussianities from this, and this leads to quite interesting exact prediction. It doesn't depend on the form factor, okay? It is just depending on, there is only one degree of freedom, and this leads to FNL squeeze limit is nearly, FNL equilateral limit is nearly 1.6 times FNL squeeze limit, 1.6 or 1.5. This is independent of the form factor. But when we open door for cubic terms, then this is very difficult to see because we cannot give a more generic prediction independent of the form factor. But RF of Boxer case, we can give precisely, at least the ratio of two limits is exact.
Okay, thanks. Okay, maybe there is time for one last quick question, if there is any. I don't see any other questions. So let's thank again, Sravan, for the nice talk and discussion.
Thank you very much. I hope I didn't go over time.